from Imabari on the Shimonami Kaido in Japan. Welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, the latest data shows that overall TV viewing figures for the Tour de France are in decline. But should we be worried? We discuss.
We've also got a new Everesting world record, a new penny farthing world record, good news for weekend warriors, and a spectacular result for Conor Dunn here at the biggest race on the planet. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that the gravel road up the Stelvio is one of the most beautiful in the entire world. If you don't already have it on your bucket list now, you will do once you've watched Ollie's video from the weekend.
Check it out if you haven't already. We also learned that the world record for a double Everesting has been broken. Alex McCormack took over 2 hours off the previous record, climbing close to 18,000 metres in 21 hours, 11 minutes, 40 seconds.
He did so on a 900-metre climb at almost 18%. Whilst he was doing it, he consumed 100 grams of carbs per hour. With my quick maths, come on, I can work out that is over 2 kilograms of carbohydrates.
That is a lot, isn't it?
A hell of a lot, yeah. Got to have guts to do that.
Yeah.
I just thought about a joke. Finally, we learned that despite the epic crowds on the roadside in Paris and much of the rest of the Tour de France, the overall TV viewing figures are, as Conor said in the intro, in decline. So Professor Daan van der Rijf posted some data on his LinkedIn after the first and second weeks of the race, which looked a little concerning for the sport and for the event.
There was a decline of between 4 and 7% across almost all major markets in that first week when compared to the 5-year average. Whilst in Spain, that decline was a whopping 28%.
Just massive, isn't it? 28%. Things didn't look quite so bad at the end of the second week, but they certainly weren't looking rosy either. So again, compared to that 5-year average, only Germany was up by 5%, probably the Lipovitz effect. France remained unchanged, whilst Belgium and Italy were down, but only fractionally.
Of more concern was Spain again and the Netherlands, where viewership was down by 18 and 14% respectively.
I feel like at this point we should probably point out that Van Rijf has spent his career focusing on professional cycling and TV audiences for major sporting events. In fact, he's published a number of academic articles on the subject and co-authored the Economics of Professional Road Cycling book. So we can trust his figures, I think.
Now, since a lot of our viewers are in the UK and USA, you're probably wondering how things are there and here. Reith didn't quote figures from those countries, but ITV commentator Ned Bolting gave some numbers when speaking to Cycling Weekly recently, where he said that 600,000 people tuned in to watch the opening stage.
By contrast, though, 3.6 million watched Bradley Wiggins become the first British winner back in 2012. The steady decline in viewership since then is likely in large part to have influenced the ITV chief's decision not to bid for rights to the race beyond this year.
Their coverage is going to be sorely missed.
Yeah, massively.
It's been a massive funnel to get people into the sport, myself included.
Wiggins is going to say, like, pro riders as well. Now, Raith doesn't have concrete figures for the US either, but he estimates the audience numbers for the Tour de France are in the tens of thousands, whilst during the Lance Armstrong era, they were often over a million.
Which makes you wonder, is audience size in most non-traditional cycling countries simply a representation of whether or not they have a current champion? That would make sense.
It would, almost undoubtedly, yeah. I'd say it does make complete sense, yeah. Because I'd imagine, although we don't have the latest figures for Slovenia, that their figures are pretty good, given the Pogacar effect. In fact, back in 2020, they more than doubled because they had two riders, Roglic and Pogacar, going head-to-head and finishing first and second after an enthralling battle. Those figures have remained fairly constant during the Pogacar era, or at least certainly up to 2023, which were the latest numbers that we could find.
Likewise, when Vingegaard won his first Tour in 2022, TV2 in Denmark recorded an average of 685,000 viewers per stage, its highest since 1997.
Yeah. Why 1997, you might ask? Because another Dane, Bjarne Riis, who we talked about on the show last week, was there at the race trying to defend his title from the previous year.
It makes sense, doesn't it? That in countries where there isn't a rich cycling heritage, interest is going to peak when a rider from that country is winning the biggest bike race in the world. The decline in viewership of more traditional cycling countries might be of more concern, though, as you'd hope that they are as interested in bike racing in general as in a particular rider. Mm. But given the decline in Spain, that's clearly not true.
No, No, and this year was a bad one for Spain at the Tour de France, wasn't it? They didn't win a single stage, and their best placed rider on GC was Carlos Rodriguez, and he was down in 20th position. So it does seem that even in the core cycling nations, you need a countryman to cheer for in order to watch, certainly in great numbers.
Except for France.
Oh, crikey, Connor. I mean, they did win a stage, didn't they? And they had two rides in the top 10.
No, mate, I'm only joking. The fact that the race is the Tour de France probably helps with viewership too, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you'd have thought so, wouldn't you? The other consideration is the Pogacar effect. And by that, I mean his stranglehold on the race, particularly this year. Because whilst the individual stage were generally very entertaining, I think you'd agree.
Oh, yeah.
I certainly thought so. There wasn't exactly a lot of jeopardy when it came to the general classification.
No, that's true.
I should also point out, I'm not trying to blame Pogacar on declining viewing numbers. He's there to do a job, and that job is to win the race. So he's not going to slow down just because it will help audience figures.
Yeah, you went quite slow. It didn't help audience figures.
I didn't go deliberately slow, Connor, but my word, you're on fire today, aren't you? Right, the question we now need to ask ourselves is, should we be concerned about what is a relatively small decline in viewing figures?
Well, it's obviously not a good sign, is it? It'd be better if it was going the other way. That said, it's the general trends over a longer period of time that are going to be more relevant, and also how cycling fares compared to other sports.
Well, on that subject, I was doing a bit of digging. So internationally, football, or soccer, I guess, over in the US, plus cricket, women's sports and Formula One all appear to be thriving, even though most of those are now entirely behind a paywall. With F1, a lot of people attribute the success of that sport to that Drive to Survive series, making it all the more disappointing, really, that the cycling equivalent wasn't successful enough to Netflix to continue with the project.
And which sports are struggling?
They are, well, in the US, let's start there. So baseball and ice hockey don't have the same audiences as their peak, whilst in the UK, tennis and rugby have been suffering, apparently. So cycling isn't alone on that front.
Are you worried about the cycling kind of decline in viewership?
Not right now, I wouldn't say. I mean, losing free-to-view coverage here in the UK is a bit of a blow, as we said earlier, but there is evidence to say that more young people, i.e. under 35s, younger than me, younger than you or not?
I'm under 35.
Oh, crikey. People like yourselves, Connor, are now consuming live sports through paid-for streaming services, which a lot of people were saying they weren't before. However, I do feel like cycling is a bit behind the times when it comes to social media, activating that, and a more modern approach in general. We all know how much influence social media has, don't we? But another big question is how you convert viewers of a viral video clip into fans of the sport who are then going to be willing to pay a subscription to watch bike racing.
I think one of my worries is the time commitment you need to properly watch the sport. Stages are generally shorter than they used to be, partly because they're literally shorter in distance, partly because they've been raced at a faster speed. But even then, you're looking at a good couple of hours to get a kind of really good idea of what's going on in a stage, particularly with winning attacks going further and further from the finish too.
I guess that's where a really, really good, well put together highlights package comes in, doesn't it? Because you are right. The only people that have really got enough time to watch all the action over 3 weeks are those either without a job or a job within the sport.
Yeah. I've got a job in the sport and I still can't
watch. Well, there you go then.
Yeah. I do think the shorter stages could be better though for long term viewership. I know that that will offend traditionalists, but we really want to get new viewers through the door, more action in a shorter period of time is surely the way to go.
You'd have thought so, wouldn't you? I'd agree with that. To be honest, I think the issues we've just been talking about are the same issues that One Cycling would like to address. And it does feel like it might need some fresh eyes and fresh ideas to truly change the sport of cycling for the better. Whether or not One Cycling can do that, or indeed whether that project even gets off the ground, is another question. But I would really like to see someone give it a try.
Yeah, definitely. And let us know what you think. And should we be worried about declining viewing figures? What would you do about it if you were in charge? Let us know in the comment section below.
We should probably finish this part of the show by giving a quick overview and wrap up of what happened in the race itself. And in fact, the first couple of days of the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift, because that's 9 days long this year. So it started last Saturday.
Yeah, today Pogacar sealed his fourth title in the men's race, making him the youngest rider ever to reach that milestone. He finished close to 4.5 minutes in front of Jonas Vingegaard.
Yeah, and 11 minutes ahead of Florian Lipovic, who finished third. Oscar Onnerly was fourth after a great battle with Lipovic for both the best young rider classification and indeed the third step on the podium. Wout van Aert, as most of you know, won the last stage. And I'm not sure what win was bigger, winning that 21st Tour de France stage or becoming the first rider in about 2 years to actually drop Pogacar on a climb.
I think the latter, personally.
I think so too.
Yeah, and I think that stage is just a brilliant example of like how a shorter stage can be so exciting.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Because how many kilometres were they actually racing for? 50-ish?
Yeah.
And it was fantastic to watch.
Yeah, it was all just like that portion of it was just brilliant. You couldn't take your eyes off
it. Yeah, same as the first stage of the women's race. 80 kilometres, but just quite a lot of action all the way through.
In the women's, Marion Vos took stage glory, though, and the yellow jersey on the opening day in Plumelec, but she lost the jersey on countback the following day to Kim Lecourt. The race continues through to Sunday.
If you're only going to make time to watch one stage, though, of the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift, make it this coming Saturday. It finishes up the Col de la Madeleine, which is a brute of a mountain.
Just before we move on, a GCN shop promo, our special range of T-shirts, which we're sporting right now, and these Camelback water bottles, there we go, are still for sale over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
They are indeed. We'll put a link to that website in the description below, or indeed, you can scan the QR code that should be on screen now.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with news of that takedown of a spectator during stage 17 of the Tour last week. Footage of this has been everywhere on the internet, so I'm sure you've spotted it. A fan jumped the barriers, then attempted to ride and cross the finish line just moments before the bunch came in.
His attempts to do so, though, were thwarted as a French police officer took him to the ground via a well-aimed shoulder barge.
I think it's shoulder barge.
Yeah, well, slash rugby tackle. It was quite dramatic either way, wasn't it?
It was dramatic. It did seem rather excessive show of force when I first saw it, if I'm honest. But I think taking everything into account and being mindful that this is the finish of a major sporting event, it's justifiable, in my opinion.
Well, it was like, just before the bunch came through, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A, and B, you want other people to look at that and think, well, I don't think I'd bother doing something similar.
Yeah, that's
if you're allowed to just ride through and nothing happens.
Yeah, and yeah, like you don't know the motivation of someone in that situation.
No, exactly, yeah. The race invader has already been sentenced over in France with an 8-month suspended sentence and a €500 fine, as well as being banned from sporting arenas for 5 years. However, it also emerged he's already been convicted 3 times prior for similar offences. So hopefully that tackle and a fine and the suspended prison sentence means it's his last.
Yeah, and as Dan says, hopefully puts him off and trying similar stunts again. Mm. Now, our main focus this month has been on the men's and women's Tour de France, but there have also been some incredible efforts on bikes outside of the biggest races on earth.
Alex McCormack is the recent winner of the Atlas Mountain Race over in Morocco, one of the biggest and most hardcore bike packing races going. That's what you told me anyway.
I love this race. It's so cool.
As we mentioned at the start of the show, though, last week he put his ultra endurance talents to good use and set a double effort Everesting world record. Now, the stats are mind blowing from his efforts. 214 kilometres covered to make up the 17,732 metres of elevation gain, 15,103 calories burnt over 21 hours and 11 minutes.
That is a lot of food, isn't it? And if you want to know what sort of mindset you'll need to beat that double Everesting record, Alex apparently listened to just 5 songs on repeat for the entirety of the ride.
You are joking.
Yeah, he said it was, like, he was pretty stoked to get the record, but it was a pretty boring one to get done, which is like, 5 songs, Alex. So I mixed it up a bit more.
That is unbelievable. Has he told you which songs he listened to?
Alex messaged me, he said which songs he listened to.
Oh, okay.
So I've got the playlist, the 5-song playlist.
Go on then. What is it?
I don't recognise any of the names. We've got something from Anthony Smirek, Monster Florence, 2 from Monster Florence actually, John and Roy and Decca.
I don't know if we've got the rights to do that.
Have we not?
No. What we could maybe do is just mute the show at this point and then you can try and gather what the music's like by our dance. Our
dancing. Yeah, so this is Anthony Smirek Seasoning. And then, yeah.
Right, that's enough of that, Connor.
I like it, but I mean, that's how many times did you listen to that?
I don't think it matters how much you like a song. I think if you listen to it for that long on repeat, you're not going to like it at the end, particularly when it's associated with what must have been a lot of suffering.
Yeah, it's a 17-minute playlist, so
Crikey.
Do the maths.
I mean, you could get more than five songs on an old Sony cassette Walkman back in the day. Right, Fair let's play. Move on from the dancing, shall we? Right, sticking with world records, there was another that was broken last week in the world of penny farthings. So the Canadian Lizanne Wilmot broke the Guinness World Record for the fastest female top speed on a penny farthing, 25.92 miles per hour.
Miles per hour is rapid. Sorry. On a penny farthing. Nah.
10 kilometres per hour, too much. And she did 1 kilometre in 52.75 seconds.
Yeah, that's fast. I would not want to go that fast on a penny farthing.
You don't want to, nor could you, I suspect.
No, that is very true. Moving on, and a piece of research I spotted during the week, actually, whose results I think we'll all be glad to hear. Weekend warrior workouts can lower your risk of early death. This is in relation to those suffering from diabetes. So the study analysed over 55,000 people between the years of 1997 and 2018. Those who got all their weekly recommended exercise completed in one or two sessions were 21% less likely to die early from any cause and 33% less likely to die from heart disease. Yeah, and that's compared to those who didn't exercise at all. So the conclusion, I think anything is better than nothing.
But that's so true. Yeah. I have to keep reminding myself of that when I find myself with less time to ride or work out than I'd anticipated. Better to get something done than nothing at all.
Yeah, 100%. An update now on Amy Hudson, aka Amy Cycling Adventures on YouTube. You may remember that we spoke about her a few weeks ago on the show. She set out to ride the whole of the men's Tour de France route, plus the transfers, to raise money for Shout, who provide 24/7 text service for people struggling with their mental health.
Yeah. Here's the update then. Not only did she smash the riding part, which is amazing, she also smashed her £10,000 aim. So as we record this, she's got £70,000 raised for that charity. An incredible accomplishment, both on the riding and the fundraising accounts.
Yeah, that is amazing. Well done, Amy.
Right, a quick bit of Zwift news now, because they've just unveiled a limited edition Zwift Ride smart frame to celebrate the Tour de France fan. Avec Zwift.
Yeah, there are 124 available, or at least there were. They were released on Saturday. And so 124 being the number of kilometres of the final stage. I've got to say, they look fantastic.
I'm not surprised you said that, Connor, because I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Did you design these bikes?
No. Why? How come?
Well, you know how come. Because they look remarkably similar to your Orbea Mayo design, should I say, from just, a couple of years ago, was that?
Yeah, you know what? It actually does, doesn't it? And the amount of grief I was given for my design there, and the Zwift designers clearly have good taste because they've gone with my approach, and I love it.
I can't believe how similar they are. Anyway, if there are any left by the time this show goes out, you can pick one up for €900 or $900 or £850. All right, I'm going to finish Cycling Shorts by congratulating Connor here. So we had an in-work GCN league over on Velo Games, and not only did he win that by a margin not even Pogacar could be capable of, he also finished 184th out of the 30,000 people that took part this year.
Thanks, mate. I'm truly honoured. It's just been a brilliant 3 weeks for me.
I mean, that must be your best ever result in a Grand Tour, isn't it?
Not quite. I got 135th in the jury.
Oh, well. Better luck next time. Next up, it's time for Hack. /Bodge of the Week. This is where you can get involved each and every week by going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader, where you can upload your photos and or videos of your own hacks and bodges or those you've seen out and about. First up this week, this one from Pold. 3D printing is not always a hack. I was too tight to buy the genuine Canyon out front mount for my Wahoo, and with access to 3D printer design, I printed my own. Unfortunately, all I had was ABS. We've just looked this up, kind of. Yeah. Didn't know what ABS was. Which isn't really appropriate for the long term. It snapped through the bolt holes, and I needed to get through the rest of my Italian cycling holiday, and a couple of zip ties worked perfectly. I can almost hear Si's anguish from holiday right now. I promise to take them off and replace the mount when I get home.
I think this is a hack.
Absolutely a hack.
The only dangerous thing with it is it's such a good hack that you get lazy and fixing it when you got home. You just kind of
Well, this is always size point. It's a hack if it gets you to the end of your ride or your expedition or whatever you're doing. If you leave zip ties on for even more than 24 hours, I think, in his opinion, once you get home, it's a bodge.
So let us know, how long did the zip ties stay on for?
Yeah, very good.
That's a hack, though.
Yeah, hack from both of us.
This is from Ash in Alsace. Luggage rack fixed with a foam mount. This morning's commute was interrupted by my luggage rack loosening the bolt that fixes it to frame. I used the clamp part of my foam mount to hold it to the bike for the last couple of kilometres. Well, immediate hack from me for putting gubbins on your bike.
Yeah, there's enough going on here for Connor's taste.
But yeah, I think this is a great hack. I mean, it's got you to work. It's got the rack working.
Yeah, and same sort of thing as the first one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something happened whilst Ash was riding. He found a solution that allowed him to continue on with his ride, presumably then just putting his phone into his pocket or in the bag that this is used or mounting. So I'd say that was a hack as well.
Yeah, that's a hack. Ingenious. Like that
so
solution.
Far, so good. This is so much easier with you than with Si. I mean, he'd be debating for a good 5 minutes more just yet.
I just love the gubbins, so.
No Can Surf sent this one in, Shimano Solution. This summer I'm studying teaching in the University of Japan, where the cycling is truly world class. Naturally, I brought my road bike, a 2025 Trek Domane. Within the first couple of weeks, however, the proprietary seat post clamp started slipping, causing me to lose about a centimetre of height after just an hour of riding. I found myself stopping to readjust the saddle 3 or 4 times per ride. The Trek shop locally ordered replacement parts, but they wouldn't arrive in time for an epic weekend ride that I'd got planned. Not willing to miss out and fed up with the constant stops, I decided to improvise. I crafted a shim from a discarded beer can using children's safety scissors that I picked up at a local shop. Secured it with red electrical tape, function over form. It may be ugly, but it worked. The shim held steady over 340 kilometres across 3 rides with only minimal slippage. Eventually, the new clamp arrived and was professionally installed, resolving the issue.
There you go. I mean, it's a great hack. Tried and tested.
This is tried and tested. The only thing that I would say is that the last time I tried and tested this was with an aluminium frame. I'm not sure I've ever used it on a carbon one with carbon C-post. Have you?
I haven't actually tried the tin can method. I have fully super crude.
Have you?
Bonded a seat post in yet. Yeah. Because I am rather big, Dan, and that doesn't go my way in life sometimes.
Well, they're following a bit of a theme, aren't they, this week? And all of these hacks, and I'm going to call this one a hack again, have allowed these people to continue doing what they wanted to do on their bikes whilst another solution was in the offing.
Yeah, it looks fairly well done, this one. It's nice and smooth around the corners, and it's obviously got you your ride done. I'd be gutted if I was missing out on a ride because of a mechanical. So, yeah, fair play. I give that a hack.
There's been large parts of my recent life where if I'd had a mechanical, I was quite happy.
I remember in races, you know, when you laugh, like, oh, wish I'd had a puncture out.
Yeah.
Just puncture, you never get it. Always happens at the worst moment.
Three hacks from three so far, and we've seen the last one, and I'm going to tell you, this is a massive hack. Check this out.
So this is from Hackman. Tour de France bedroom, we had our children switch rooms so two would be in the bigger bedroom. They didn't really want to move, so the hack here is decorating their room however they wanted to get them excited. It's a very good hack, I'm going to keep that in mind. My six-year-old son has gotten into professional cycling, especially the tour, so he wanted his room Tour de France themed, and this is the result. The photo is a panorama, so you can see all four walls. Shout out to my parents, their grandparents are putting in most of the work.
This is a double hack, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's firstly describe the room to podcast listeners. So it's got a Tour de France flag hanging off the top part of the wall. There's a green section of wall, there's a polka dot section, and of course, there's a yellow section too. It looks absolutely fantastic. And the dream here, Connor, is that as you read out towards the end, they didn't even do it themselves. Hackman got the parents to do it, the grandparents.
That is the ultimate hack.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Oh, what a great job they've done.
Yeah.
Four hacks from four this week.
There's a silhouette. The silhouette of the cyclist on the yellow is brilliant.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I couldn't have done it any better. I bet the kids absolutely love that.
Yeah,
so well done to you, / your grandparents.
Right, it is time for caption competition, where you send in your best captions for a photo of our choosing with a chance of winning the coveted GCN Camelback water bottle that you see right here now. Last week we had a photo of Primoz Roglic, who unfashionably didn't wear any socks.
Apparently, unfashionably, we were told last week, or I was told by Si, skinny jeans and ankle socks are a sign that you're a bit older.
I mean, as you can tell, I'm not one who pays a huge amount of attention to fashion. But I find it very weird, Ryan's ankle socks.
Yeah.
He was losing power.
I'm not as tall as you, but I am quite tall. I always felt like longer socks made your legs look not quite as long, personally. I think shorter socks do look better if you're shorter in stature.
Did we ever find out why he wore that? Did he like lose his socks or forget them?
I've got no idea. I think as much as he pretends that he doesn't want to be in the headlines, I actually think Primoz does quite like to make the headlines. Anyway, regardless, we've got a winner. And the winner is Easton Brown, who put, everyone loves Primoz. Bless his little cotton socks.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Very good.
Get in touch, Easton.
Yeah, get in touch on Facebook with a message to Global Cycling Network with your address, and we'll get a bottle sent out to you. Connor's just told me that he's got his own caption ready for this week's photo, which is this one of Tamon Allenspin after his second stage win in the mountains of the Tour de France. So exhausted, he sat down resting against the barriers with his bike by his side. So I will get you started. And then Connor will get you even more started, and then you can put your captions in the comments section down below. Mine's short and sweet. Success to barrier.
Yeah, get that. That's a good one.
If you don't get it, it's a sort of reverse of barrier to success. Anyway, Connor's got a good one. Here you go.
Yeah, the DS just kept playing the same five songs in the radio. Please make it stop.
That does look exactly how I would think someone would look if they'd spent 21 hours listening to five tracks on repeat.
I'm pretty sure it's a torture method. It's
like, must be, mustn't it?
Oh, yeah. I don't know, maybe it's very meditative.
I want to know if he's ever going to listen to those songs ever again.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going off topic. Yep. Get involved in the comments section down below with your best captions, and we will pick a winner this time next week. Very shortly, we'll let you know what's coming up on GCN this week. First up, a few comments from last week, starting with three from underneath last week's show. Philip Jongerjan, do you reckon that's how you say it? Jongerjan.
I'm not the person to ask, Dan.
We were speculating about why it was called Champagne Gravel. They said it can only be called Champagne Gravel if it comes from the Champagne region of France. If it's anywhere else, it has to be called Sparkling Gravel. I thought that was genius. Gary Honor, meanwhile, thinks it was the folks out at SBT who coined the Champagne Gravel phrase, he thinks.
Jonathan Ben, socks and cows, size hang-ups are legend.
Well, I sent Si a video from my gravel ride on Saturday because I rode past quite a large herd of cows.
Really?
Yeah. Thought he'd like to see it.
Si's got me nervous about cows. I was never nervous about them before. Oh, really? Now every time I go for a herd of cows, I'm like, Si says they're really...
Well, I understand the nervousness, but then I sometimes see farmers just stood in the middle of loads of cows and think, well, if they were that dangerous, surely farmers would be getting killed left, right and centre. Yeah. Anyway. Underneath the protein video, which is where I asked three World Tour team nutritionists. Actually, I got that wrong. One of them wasn't from the World Tour, but from Uno X, James Moran. But regardless, all experts in their field. Working guy OU812, so thanks for this down on GCN. So anyone who wants to see a new protein cooking video, EF Education just released one on their team cook doing a day's work yesterday. A day of eating at the Tour de France Stage 17. Must check that out. Obviously, we have both eaten during Grand Tours, but at this point, especially for me, it's quite some time ago. So I'm quite interested to see exactly what they're eating at this point.
Yeah, Chris Van Buggenham 871 said, laundry drying on a lampshade, hack or bodge.
Just a necessity, isn't it, at the Tour de France? This is James Moran of Uno X, and in the background of his shot, there was, not pants, thankfully, a T-shirt. Draped over the lampshade.
It's one of those rare skills you get as a pro cyclist, is figuring out where to dry your clothes in a hotel room.
Yeah. Do you know what I was asking him as well about, because it used to be the case that the chefs would make lunches and dinners, or breakfast and dinners, let's say, for the riders during the race, but the staff had to just eat the hotel food. But they'd wait, and there'd be a massive rush at the end of the ride's eating if there were any leftovers, vultures coming in for the better food, because the food can be pretty bad. At some of the hotels that you end up in a Grand Tour, in France especially.
Yeah, yeah. I was lucky to have a chef in Spain as well, and I was very thankful for it.
Oh, so good, isn't it? Yeah. So good. Yeah. Meanwhile, what we learned said, is Dan doing a lot more videos because he's been blackmailed again? I hope so, because I like blackmail and Dan in videos. Well, very kind of you to say. Thank you very much. In answer to your question, no, I wasn't blackmailed.
Under Ollie's secret Stelvio video, which was really magnificent, actually, this has been sent in by GMA Druger. Danielle is the perfect image of a Legion commander under Caesar during the Gallic Wars. Suntanned, calm, confident, strong, and hard as a rock. Ollie, you rock too.
He was cool, calm, and collected.
Yeah.
Wasn't he? My goodness. Burkester, but this video shows very clearly why gravel blew up. No cars, spectacular nature, light bikes. Yes, you can do it with an XC bike, but weight does matter, and even a budget gravel bike is pretty good for this. I love this video. I fell in love with gravel because of GCN, the Iceland video years back. That was with Si, wasn't it? And this just adds to it.
Nice one, Shun. While the cycling, that looks totally stunning, added to the list. Thanks for putting it on our radars, and thanks everyone involved for making this brilliant video. Is the GPX file available at all? Ask him for a friend. Well, if you do go to Ollie Strava, he's got it listed in his routes if you want to check that out.
Yeah, he has got it over there. We probably should have put the link into the description below this video, or below that video, as the case was. But yeah, head to Ollie Strava and you'll be able to find the GPX if you go there. Right then, coming up on the channel this week, we do have a video on Thursday, but we can't tell you much about it. It's a new bike, which is embargoed until that day. But stay tuned, because you're not going to want to miss that one. Then on Saturday, we sent Andrew Feather to Alpe d'Huez. And you all know what that means. Yes, he went there to try and beat the record. Make sure you watch that one as well, because it's going to be very, very interesting. I know that for a fact.
I want to say for them, but I don't want to reveal too much. Then on Sunday, we've got mountain biker versus roadie. This is our new recruit, Fergus, over on GMBN, our mountain bike channel. And he takes on a local crit race with Alex.
Yeah, Alex tries to coach him, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I've heard Alex is going to, there's going to be a role reversal soon. So Alex is taking on an enduro. And I've heard the course is actually pretty spicy. So I think Fergus might get some revenge.
Well, you don't give away too much from the first.
Well, no, I don't.
Revenge for what kind of?
Well, yeah, mate, I'm just assuming.
Have you not seen it?
You've not seen how fast Alex goes.
Right, thanks for watching, everyone. I look forward to reading your comments about declining Tour de France viewership on TV and what you would do about it. We'll be back again this time next week, so we'll see you then.